Right now, save 50 to 70% off absolutely everything at Gap Factory. Even better, get 40% off clearance styles, plus t-shirts from $4.99 and shorts from $9.99. And just in time for summer, save 50 to 70% off the entire store at Banana Republic Factory. Plus, 50% off clearance and doorbuster dresses and polos starting at $19.99. Only at Banana Republic Factory stores. Search our store locator for your nearest Gap Factory and Banana Republic Factory store, or shop us online.
Progressive presents Get Pumped. Inspiration to help you do insurance stuff.
Okay, time out. You're gonna let your budget be the boss of you? Take control with Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay for car insurance, and we'll help you find options that fit your budget. Here's some music to get you pumped. Da-dum-da-dum-da-dum-da-dum-dang-dang. I hear your budget laughing at you.
Oh, wait, that's just those kids laughing at me.
Ignore them!
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Aloha, everybody. This is Kathy Bilski, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show on UPRN Radio. And this is May 25th, 2018. And really, I hope you have a very safe Memorial Day weekend. Today, we've got a really special guest. I've got Kelly Bargabos. I hope I pronounced that right.
You did pretty good.
Thank you. And she wrote a really wonderful book called Chasing the Merry-Go-Round. And it's all about understanding invisible disabilities. Now, we accept and accommodate visible disabilities with such things as wheelchair ramps and public restroom access. Now, invisible disabilities come in many forms and are really not easy to address, from depression and anxiety to severe allergies, from intellectual limitations to autoimmune diseases. These disorders exist all around us. Now, an invisible disability, whether physical or intellectual, is one that is really not obvious at first glance. Now, there's no outward sign that fits our culture's preconceived ideas of what determines a disability. An invisible disability causes limitations and challenges that can make ordinary life more difficult. And because of the invisible nature, people that struggle with these are most often judged, misunderstood, and marginalized. So how do we help those we love cope with these disorders? And, you know, Kelly is the author today, and she's going to give us some very helpful tips. So thank you for coming on the program, Kelly.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So give us a little bit about your background.
The reason this topic is so near and dear to my heart is that I have a brother who struggles with invisible disabilities, and I've witnessed how it has impacted his life.
Well, what do you actually consider an invisible disability?
Sure. An invisible disability is really any physical, mental, or neurological condition that limits a person's movements, their senses, their activities, really their ability to navigate in this world the way that you and I might be able to. Some common ones that people might relate to are psychiatric disorders like depression, PTSD, bipolar. There's also intellectual limitations like learning disabilities, low IQ, traumatic brain injury, and also physical diseases that aren't always obvious. You know, my brother struggles with narcolepsy. There's things like epilepsy, chronic pain, just to give a few examples.
Well, would you consider somebody with Asperger's in that group?
Absolutely. Yep. For sure. And it's really any of those disorders that are challenging and create limitations. And again, the most significant characteristic is they're not obvious to the onlooker. They're not transparent, especially at first glance.
Well, you said that your brother's disabilities really affected you quite heavily. How?
You know, my brother came to live with us when he was 10 months old. My parents adopted him, and I was 8 years old at the time. And, you know, when he first came to live with us, we really didn't understand everything that he was challenged with. We knew at a young age that he struggled with speech and learning and speed, but we really didn't understand why. And it took many, many years, and it was a long, difficult journey that I'm sure many people can probably relate to, that was full of frustrations and lack of understanding on why he couldn't do some of the things we expected of him. And
well, one of the things you mentioned, narcolepsy. And if people understand what that is, and my girlfriend had it when I first met her, and correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that someone who can just fall asleep at the moment's notice?
Yes, that's the most significant symptom of narcolepsy, is excessive daytime sleepiness. And it's really your brain doesn't have the ability to regulate your sleep-wake cycles like it does for you or I. And, it's often narcolepsy is portrayed in the movies and on television as being comical or a joke. But in reality, when you fall asleep like that in the middle of the day, when you should be working or when you're driving or when you're in school, it really makes life extremely challenging.
Well, it is. And I have to share, you know, my girlfriend would all of a sudden fall asleep and fall and hurt herself.
Yes.
So that really, you know, what else, what other kind of disabilities did your brothers have?
My brother was born with fetal alcohol syndrome, but he wasn't diagnosed with it until he was 30. So that has created learning disabilities. He has lower than average IQ. And, you know, basically, in a nutshell, the world most of the time just moves too fast for him.
What is that? You said prenatal addiction?
Fetal alcohol. No, fetal alcohol syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And fetal alcohol syndrome happens when the mother consumes alcohol while pregnant. And it affects the developing fetus's brain.
Wow. Now, when your parents adopted your brother, did they know he had all these disabilities?
No, the only thing they knew at the time is that he was in an abusive situation, and his parents were not able to take care of him. He was malnourished and abused, and so they thought they were just rescuing him from all of that and brought him home to live with us, and that then he would be okay, you know, that they would raise him in a loving home, just like they had the rest of me and my siblings, and that everything would turn out okay.
Well, how did that really impact the family when you started to learn that he was different?
You know, I think any family who struggles with things like this, disabilities, you know, it adds stress and tension. You know, as we all know, no families are perfect, and there's always a certain amount of stress and tension in a family. And I think this just adds to it. And again, we didn't really understand what was happening or why he struggled. You know, we thought, you know, he came to live with us. He was being raised in the same environment we'd all been raised in. You know, why can't he do everything, you know, in a quote unquote normal way like the rest of us?
Wow.
Yeah.
So you said you also have other brothers and sisters.
Yes. I have one other brother and two sisters.
Older?
I have a brother and sister older, and I have a sister younger than me, and then, of course, Bobby is younger than me. So I'm smack dab in the middle.
Oh, wow. My younger brother's name, Bobby, too. How interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, you've become your brother's advocate. So when did you start doing that?
You know, it's one of those things where it seems like it's always been happening. It's hard to pinpoint exactly when. But it started young, even as simply as when he and my mother were in a stressful situation, I would intervene and I would stick up for him and help him when he made bad decisions. I was always defending him. But it really kicked into high gear when he was about 16. He ran away from home. And that really is what started he and I on this journey together of trying to figure out what was happening in his life.
Wow. How long ago was that? How old is he now?
He is 42 now. So it was a long time ago.
Okay. So then you've really gone through a lot of journeys. And I'm sure back then they really didn't have a lot of books written on how to take care of him and what to do, was there?
Right. No, especially when he was younger and in school. You know, he was in school in the late 70s and early 80s. And I think, you know, as a society, we were just on the brink of really understanding and figuring out learning disabilities and how to help kids who struggled in school. Fetal alcohol syndrome is a pretty new phenomenon, too, that is widely misunderstood and undiagnosed in our society. And so is narcolepsy. I mean, most doctors struggle to understand it. You know, it's a pretty misunderstood disease as well.
Well, in my friend's case, it was bad drugs that the doctors put her on. And when they changed her prescription, you know, she doesn't do that anymore. But it's scary because, I mean, I never knew, you know, we could be talking and the next thing I know, she, you know, could be snoring. And then, you know, she was on a chair, she'd be, you know, leaning forward, going down. So that had to been really awful in school also.
Right. And he, you know, went undiagnosed for many years. We really started to notice it in his early 20s. And it took almost 10 years to get a full medical diagnosis and really get him treatment that he needed.
When did you realize that he had the alcohol, baby alcohol syndrome?
You know, I have a sister who's an RN, and I remember one day we were at my mom's house for Sunday dinner, and we were talking about Bobby and some of his struggles, and my sister said to me, you know, he reminds me of one of my patients that has fetal alcohol syndrome. And I had never really thought about it before, hadn't heard much about it. And when she said that, it piqued my interest. And so I went on the computer and I did an internet search for fetal alcohol syndrome. And as I read the description and the symptoms of someone with fetal alcohol syndrome, and it was just like a movie was playing in my head of Bobby's life and all the things that he had struggled with. And we knew also that his history as an infant, we knew his mom drank when she was pregnant. It was rumored that she had done some drugs. And so we knew that history was there. And it was amazing reading the physical characteristics of someone with fetal alcohol, the learning disabilities, the speech impediments, all of the things that Bobby had struggled with were there right in front of me. And so that really set me on our journey. We found a doctor, a specialist close to where we lived who dealt with fetal alcohol syndrome. And it took many months to get in with him, but we made an appointment and had him evaluated and tested and finally got the diagnosis. And there's nothing you can do for it. There's no treatment. It's a lifelong condition. But at least we had some understanding and awareness and, you know, had some answers as to why we were dealing with what we were dealing with.
Now, your book, Chasing the Merry-Go-Round, you know, actually allows readers to see the world through the eyes of your brother.
Mm-hmm.
So can you just explain some of what he saw and went through?
Sure. You know, one of the, first of all, the reason for the title, Chasing the Merry-Go-Round, I talk about this metaphor in the book that, you know, what life is like for someone like my brother is an old-fashioned merry-go-round at my playground where I grew up. This was, you know, in the early 70s, and we had one of those old merry-go-rounds that kids could pump and get going as fast as possible, and kids would try to run and jump on it while it was spinning, and it was so dangerous. They would never allow those types of merry-go-rounds on playgrounds today, but it really just struck me as the way that my brother has tried to live his life. He's always trying to get up on this merry-go-round of what we consider a normal life in our society. And I tried for many, many years to help him get on that merry-go-round. I tried to help him run faster. I tried to carry him. I tried to get him up and get him this normal life that we all strive for. Finally realizing that, you know, I just couldn't do it, and that not everyone needs to get on that merry-go-round. And some of the kids are stuck on the sidelines watching the rest of us go round. And I think for me, that's what life is like for someone like him. The world just moves too fast, and they're sort of stuck on the sidelines watching the rest of us go round and round and live our life. And we live in a very fast-paced society, and we have high expectations of people. Some of the things he struggles with are he has a third grade reading level. So if you can imagine trying to navigate through life as an adult with a third grade reading level and trying to navigate, you know, cell phone contracts and even forms for government assistance, you know, there's a lot of safety nets we have to help people like my brother, but, you know, you have to fill out a 20-page form. And when you have a third grade reading level, that's it's almost an impossible barrier to getting the very help that you need, things like that. And it's very hard to hold down a job, especially, you know, when you combine that with the physical disease of narcolepsy.
That's absolutely true. So is he living independently now?
He lives independently with a lot of help, with a lot of assistance. You know, over the years, we've figured out a lot of things. We've finally tweaked his drugs and his medication for his narcolepsy, and we have that in a better place now so that he's not falling and hurting himself as much. He can't drive because of the narcolepsy. So that really limits him too. He has to rely on family and friends for rides or public transportation. But he lives for the most part independently. I manage his money and pay all, you know, help him pay his bills and make sure that all of that is his needs are taken care of. But he works 10 to 15 hours a week at a job and does some other odd jobs around his neighborhood.
So what kind of tips do you have for helping a family member or friend with an invisible disability?
Well, for me, it's about three things. When you're dealing with yourself and a disability, or you're dealing with a friend or a loved one, it's about awareness, understanding, and acceptance. You know, and for me, awareness is the first step to understanding, and that is learning all you can about the disability. In order to be able to help someone, it's important to seek knowledge about what you're dealing with. What are the scope of limitations or challenges they endure? You know, what treatments are available? Where can their boundaries be challenged or pushed? But having said all that, more than anything else, we need to allow for the possibility that we may not know everything about a person, and we may never know or really understand what they're struggling with. Secondly, understanding will allow us to make a difference. And part of understanding is realizing what you have in common with all people. People with invisible disabilities want the same things that you and I want. They want to be seen and heard. They want to have a voice. They want to be part of something bigger than themselves. You know, they want family and they want to work and they want relationships. They want to be seen for who they are, not by what they can or cannot do. And thirdly, I think acceptance is the most powerful gift we can give. You know, unconditional love and acceptance. We all want to feel relevant. We all want to have our place in the world. And sometimes when we have an invisible disability, those feelings are elusive. And if we can provide unconditional acceptance and love, we can turn that into a reality for people. And it most importantly, it means letting go, and truly accepting someone the way they are means letting go of what we think they should aspire to. And we need to challenge our ideals and our culture's ideals of what a normal life is.
Now, are there support groups?
You know, I think it depends on what you're dealing with. You know, a lot of the disorders that we talked about earlier, there are support groups, and you should definitely seek those out wherever you can. I know in our hometown, when Bobby was really struggling with his narcolepsy, we looked around for a support group and we couldn't find one. And I promised him that someday we would start our own. And we did. In 2013, we started a Central New York support group for narcolepsy, and did that for a couple of years. And there's many groups online today. That's one of the wonderful things about the internet and even Facebook, is there's all kinds of support groups online where you can find people who struggle with the same thing that you do. And sometimes that's all it takes to make you feel less alone in the world.
Well, you use the CSEE acronym for interacting with anyone with an invisible disability. Can you elaborate on that a little?
Sure. You know, this is about putting, I talked about awareness, understanding, and acceptance into daily practice. And for me, I developed this acronym or formula called the C approach. Every day, all of us encounter people in different situations, and we form judgments right away without all the facts. It's human nature. We do it in our daily lives. We hear about it on the news. And oftentimes, there's more to the story than what we see at first glance. So I challenge myself to approach people in a different way. And the acronym C, S stands for stop. You know, before you judge someone or say something impatient or hurtful, pause. Just take a breath, a beat, a moment before you react. The second letter E stands for evaluate. Ask some questions. Is there impairment? Could there be more than what I see on the surface? And lastly, the second letter E, empathize, which simply means to put yourself in their shoes and give compassion. Try to feel what they're feeling. Stop, evaluate, empathize, and help you to see people in a different way.
Wow, that's really lovely. I like that. So how has being your brother's advocate impacted your life? You've been doing it for all his life, yeah?
Yeah. I realized, you know, one of the things I realized as I was writing this book is, you know, he's more than just a brother or an advocate. He's really, we're soulmates. And I just couldn't get away from that feeling that, you know, he is my soulmate. And I think, you know, being in that position and being an advocate for him has been an honor, really. You know, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say that it hasn't been hard. You know, it is, it's time consuming, and it can cause frustration, but mostly for me, it causes sadness. Just the hardest part is knowing the things he dreams of are out of his reach. But the positive far outweighs the negative.
I do want to clear this up with people. And when people use the word soulmate, that does not necessarily mean to me your divine partner. A soulmate is somebody that you come together, and it could be short term or long term, to learn a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it, not only have you come together to also teach other people and to, you know, really bring this up to the surface and what I call into the light. Because like you said, many people are going through it. And unless you talk about it, you know, they don't know it's out there.
Right. Right. Yeah. So often I think we've grown up thinking soulmate is your partner, your husband, your wife, you know, it's a romantic relationship. And he's really changed my viewpoint on that for sure.
Mm-hmm. And what's the biggest lesson you've learned so far?
You know, for me, he's taught me so many things, but probably the biggest thing I've learned is, you know, that a big theme in the story that I've written is home. You know, he was ripped from an abusive birth home when he was a baby, and he spent the rest of his life trying to find home. And and home is something that I've always aspired to as well. And for me, I've learned that home is a place all of us want to be. We all want to have our corner of the world surrounded by people who know us, accept us, love us, a place where we're safe, warm, fed, a place where we have enough, where we are enough. And for me, I've finally figured out that this is really all there is.
Wow. Who do you think should read your book?
You know, I think certainly anybody who struggles with or has a loved one or friend who struggles with invisible disabilities. You know, there's a lot of people out there who have adopted children, and there's parents and siblings of people with invisible disabilities. I also think it could be a great family read. You know, if you have preteen children or older, it could be a great way to generate family conversation, especially if you have someone in your family who's struggling with invisible disabilities, or if you just want to create some awareness for your children as they navigate school and life. I think that could be a great use for it.
So when you moved from New York, upstate New York, to Southern California, did your brother go with you?
No. No, he did not.
Well, I'm sure you left him in very good hands.
I did. Yeah, he was in a good place, and he lives about a mile from my parents, and my other siblings have really stepped up to help take care of him, and we just had to change things up a little bit. I'm still his rep payee. I get on the phone with his doctors, and I still manage his money, and he's been out to visit me, and I go back and visit him as much as I can, and I know that it's not going to be too long, and we'll be together again.
How did he take the change? How did he accept the book?
He has been excited about the book from the very beginning. I involved him from the beginning and got, you know, I interviewed him and fact-checked all of my memories against his, and he answered questions and gave me some insight that I needed to complete it. And he's as someone who spent most of his life feeling unheard and misunderstood, he really wanted to share his story with the world so that people could understand what life is like for someone like him. So he's excited about it.
And how has the rest of the family reacted?
Very positive. You know, it's always interesting when one member of the family shares all the family stories, but my parents have been super supportive of sharing the story, and so have my brothers and sisters.
Well, it sounds like they've really stepped up, though, and in something that probably could have been very, very hard on your brother, that they made it easier by coming in and, you know, filling your shoes. So now you know how many people it takes to fill your shoes, the rest of the family. And, you know, what actually compelled you to write the book?
You know, I've just always felt like it's an important story. I think there's a lot of people like my brother in this world, you know, people who need a little extra help to keep up with this fast-paced system we've created. And, you know, if I can help just bring that awareness and help other people who are struggling, you know, the sad thing is, you know, we joke about how many people it takes to support someone like my brother. And I always think about those people who don't have that support system and don't have that big family around them to help. You know, I feel strongly that a lot of those people are the ones who end up on our streets that are homeless.
Well, that brings me to this question. Has, you know, the government's really mucking with healthcare, and is that going to affect your brother and his ability to be able to be out on his own?
Yeah, I know. Every time I hear those headlines, I cringe. It could. I mean, I sort of keep my fingers crossed that that it won't. But definitely, every time they talk about those government programs and pulling back on Medicaid and food stamps and healthcare, disability payments, all of those things would significantly impact him.
Boy, I do understand completely.
Yeah.
You know, he's really lucky to have such a supportive family.
We're lucky to have him. But again, you know, it's a sobering fact when you think about all the people out there who don't have that safety network or that support. That's why we need these government programs and government safety nets.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. So your book, Chasing the Merry-Go-Round, Holding On to Hope and Home When the World Moves Too Fast, where can they get it?
Yes. You can get it on Amazon. It is available Kindle and print version. Audio version is coming very soon. And if any of your listeners are interested, they can check out the website at chasingthemerrygoround.com. There's all kinds of information on there as well, and information and links to get the book.
Now, do you find people contacting you for advice?
Yes. You know, it's funny. This is one of those stories when you start to share it with people, or people who've read my book are messaging me and saying things like, you know, my younger brother had struggled with mental intellectual disabilities, or, you know, one of my cousins who's, you know, my first cousin, and I had no idea he had a daughter with bipolar and ADHD, and they went through a lot of struggles. So people want to share their stories with you as well, because they connect to it. And I love that.
Wow. How long did it take for you to write the book?
Goodness. It took probably 4 or 5 years to write it. Mm. It was a long process.
Now, your brother, he's 42. And what do you see as his biggest challenge at 42?
I think just as, you know, you get older in this world, it becomes even, you know, more and more difficult for all of us, right? As we age in this society of ours. And I think for someone who's already struggling with physical and intellectual disabilities, it just becomes harder. His health issues, I think, are becoming a bigger deal. You know, he's got the narcolepsy, and he's on so many medications to control that. And he's just in poor health overall. And he can't drive. I worry about what's going to happen when my parents pass on. You know, my parents are almost 80.
Ooh, wow.
And, you know, just what impact that will have on him. And, that's my biggest fear. And what you already touched on about some of the government support that we're always fighting over, whether or not it's going to be there or not for people, you know, that concerns me as well, if those things go away.
But you're living in California right now?
I am living in San Diego right now, yes.
And then is he in New York?
He is. He's in Syracuse, New York.
Well, I would think that wherever the best program would be is where he would go.
Right, right. And right, yeah, we've talked about moving him out here. We're looking at that.
Isn't California a little bit more kinder, shall we say, when in healthcare?
You know, I think New York isn't too far behind. I think New York has been actually has some really great programs as well.
Now, your brother, Bobby, does he also go to any group meetings?
He doesn't. No, he doesn't right now. No.
Did he? You know, is that part of his, you know, learning to be, out on your own? And
yeah, he has worked with some agencies. He worked with some agencies that helped him with employment counseling and job coaching, and he's gone to narcolepsy support groups, and he has done some other program to help him with his education as much as he could, for sure. Over the years, he's done a lot of different things.
You know, it's got to be so tough with the narcolepsy. I mean, every time you say that, I kind of cringe, especially trying to hold down a job when you can fall asleep at the in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it is. It's and there's different levels of narcolepsy, I think different severity that people have of it. And he just so happens to have all four of the major symptoms of narcolepsy, which is the sleepiness. There's this the symptom called cataplexy, where your leg muscles just give out and you collapse. It's almost like you're having a seizure, which has been really dangerous. And then there's hallucinations. You know, they can have hallucinations when they're falling asleep or when they're waking up, and that is terrifying for them. They see things that aren't there. They imagine horrible things, and they think it's real. And that's also a symptom of narcolepsy.
Well, in my girlfriend's case, she was actually, her gift of sight was enhanced. So when she would drift off, she would, you know, really get a lot of precognitive inspiration. But it was, you know, she couldn't drive anymore. Thank God she took herself off the road. But yeah, all those symptoms is what she had. It was scary.
Now,
I mean, how do you get a job like that? Really, who would hire you?
Right. Well, and most people wouldn't. And that's when he worked with this one agency and a job coach. And he went through many jobs. I mean, he's had so many jobs over the years, lost jobs and found jobs again, and all at minimum wage, of course. But he got very lucky, and he landed a job at this convenience store in upstate New York, and he's worked there for 10 years now, and they're wonderful to him. They're patient, they understand, and he works 10 to 15 hours a week doing maintenance and, you know, sweeping the parking lot and cleaning out the car wash and cleaning the gas pumps, and he has a real community of friends there, and they've been wonderful.
Oh, that's awesome. It really is.
That
makes a difference. So there's people that are actually understand him completely, and they're looking out for him.
Yes, they do. And that's one of the things that gives me peace too, being so far away, that I know he's developed this community that does look out for him.
Well, you know, you leaving in one was a trade-off, you know, by you getting, you know, leaving his life, he's had to expand. And people had to step up.
And, you know, he's so, I started to ask me earlier, I think, what he thought about me moving away. And he's got such a sweet and gentle heart and spirit. And one of the reasons why I moved away is because I went through a divorce. I was married for 20 plus years and went through a very sad time, a very sad divorce. And, you know, that really upset Bobby. And so I had an opportunity to move away, and he came to me one day and said, you know, I think you need to do it. I want you to be happy again. And, you know, it's just so, just touched my heart. He just is a special, very special person.
Oh, that's very sweet. You know, you're two are really tied together, and you had a mission, and this book is part of that.
Yes.
Sometimes it's not easy being what I call the pioneer.
Yes.
And, you know, you're writing the book that should have been written years ago.
Right.
But, better late than never.
That's right.
I really appreciate you coming on tonight. And, you know, what we've talked about, I think, is really, really important. And, you know, even when somebody does have a visible disability, you should have the same attitude.
Absolutely. Yep.
You know, I was very lucky. I'm 65, so I know about those merry-go-rounds. Yeah, at least ours was on grass and not cement. Okay.
Right.
Which, you know, a lot of it was on cement. Oh dear, I lost my train of thought. Oh, wow, that was a bubble. 65 going back. Merry-go-round. God, it went out the door. What were we talking about?
I think we were wrapping up. Oh, how important it is, even for people with visible disabilities, to approach them
thank
the
you.
same way.
My sister, she fell in a bathtub of scalding hot water. Now, I'm 65. She would have been 78 if she would still be living. And back then, mom was had a one of those washboards, and she would put scalding hot water. So my sister burned herself really bad on her arms and her legs. But because it didn't stop her from doing anything, she was a really great athlete. And, she could do anything she wanted. I never saw it as a handicap. And even though her hands were, pretty bad shape, she could still type. And, I really understand. It's a different world. And now, I see people with disabilities, and I really don't see their disability. So, it's twofold. Some of them don't want you to see, and yet, when they're invisible, you really have to see it.
And again, at least, have some awareness that it could be there.
I think so. And, you even mentioned brain trauma, and they're learning about brain trauma with athletes and that. And I know from person, now I didn't have it, but I've known some people very close who've had brain trauma, and they're not the same people. And, because you don't see it, feel it, touch it, you don't think about, that as being a disability.
Because on the surface they look just like you or I. Especially when
Yeah.
somebody has cognitive, limitations. You can't see it. And if they're not visible, if they're not obvious, if they don't have a clinical diagnosis, for example, of mental retardation, which is anybody under a certain IQ level. But there's a lot of people, my brother's one of them, his IQ is just 2 points above that of the mental retardation threshold. So, we've created these lines, and we have, the scale and where everybody falls on it, but we really don't talk about those people who are just above the threshold. What does that mean? They're well out of the normal range of cognitive functioning, but we don't really have a diagnosis for that.
They're in between, they're overlooked because they're not in the box. If
We
you're a
often
little
call
bit too smart for us to put you in this category, so we're just going to make it hard for you. Oh, the logic is unbelievable. Wow. Well, again, I really appreciate you coming on and really talking about this, which really, needs to be discussed. And again, your book is called Chasing the Merry-Go-Round, Holding On to Hope and Home Where Their More World Moves Too Fast. And it's Kelly Bargabos. Oh, I would love to just sing your name.
website is chasingthemerrygoround.com.
Chasing the Merry-Go-Round. And if you can't spell that, it's Chasingthemerrywound.
That's right.
Yeah, I find myself the older I get, I just can't spell anymore. Thank God for spell check. Oh
I
my
know.
God.
What would we do without it?
Really look not too intelligent.
Right.
I spell as it sounds, and I went to Mexico to get my teeth done, which I highly recommend to anybody. And the guy, now I did have a Valium in my system, and he says his name was Jesus, and of course that's Jesus in Hispanic, but Jesus to me, I'm spelling it, H-A-Z-E-A-U-S.
So, oh, that's good.
It's like, no, but and again, can people get a hold of you if they need to ask you any questions? It's on your website.
Sure. Yes, there's a contact form on my website. It comes right to my email. So absolutely. I'd love to hear from you.
All right. Well, thank you again, Kelly, for coming on. And that's it for tonight, guys. Thanks for listening. And, you know, have a little bit more compassion with people. And please, for God's sake, quit spreading false rumors about Hawaii and that Hawaii's going to drop into the ocean or split in half and there's going to be giant tidal waves. Cancel, clear, cancel, clear. I just want to let y'all know that the island of Hawaii, the one that's having the active volcano right now, is over, it's 600 miles to drive around, and that's not getting off anywhere. The lava flow is probably taking up, oh, maybe 75 miles of the island, okay? 600 miles, the island is so big. Volcano lava, 75 miles. Now, I will say it does kind of suck to live down south from the volcano because that's the way the ash blows. But people up here in the north, we've got good air. You know, it's wonderful swimming. So don't cancel out your trips if you're coming to Hawaii. Matter of fact, this is probably a good time because it's low on tourists, you know. But wow, you can actually come out and have a life, many life experiences and, you know, see lava flow. And on that note, I'm going to say aloha to everybody and drive safe and, you know, just enjoy your family and have a great weekend. On that note, aloha.
Right now, save 50 to 70% off absolutely everything at Gap Factory. Even better, get 40% off clearance styles, plus t-shirts from $4.99 and shorts from $9.99. And just in time for summer, save 50 to 70% off the entire store at Banana Republic Factory. Plus, 50% off clearance and doorbuster dresses and polos starting at $19.99. Only at Banana Republic Factory stores. Search our store locator for your nearest Gap Factory and Banana Republic Factory store, or shop us online.
Napa Know-How.
Hear that screeching sound from your car? It's your brakes yelling, "Change me." So head to any Napa Auto Care Center and we'll replace them for you. Or go to any Napa Auto Parts store and do it yourself. Either way, you'll get a $50 prepaid Visa card by mail on qualifying purchases over $250. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Offer expires 5/31/18.